You're listening to Love with Service Radio, a platform where service-minded individuals share, discuss, and inspire positive thoughts and ideas. Stay tuned to enjoy their transformative and engaging stories. My name is Spencer, and today with us we have karate master Hanchi Dina Naidu. Hanchi Dina Naidu is a world-renowned karate master and is a direct student of Gogen Yamaguchi Sensei, who was also one of the great karate masters of recent history. Hanchi's great skill has led him to teaching karate to elite military battalions and working with directors and choreographers in the film industry. Hanchi currently teaches at Goshen Khan Dojos in Sydney, Australia, and travels to India, South Africa, Botswana, and Kenya to meet and teach his teachers and students there. As the number of karate practitioners from other countries reaching out to Hanchi for information has steadily increased, he established his website to make his knowledge more accessible to students and teachers of all levels, wherever in the world they may be. Hanchi's website is goshenkhaninternational.com. Here are a few things that Hanchi Dina Naidu has to say about karate. The karate world is moving from I, the spirit, to I, the ego. As generations pass, nothing of the old will be retained. I am now sharing many things about traditional karate that today's teachers and students have not heard about. Goshen Khan retains the teachings of Gogen Yamaguchi Sensei so it can be used solely for the purpose of self-preservation, protecting the body, self-discipline of the mind, and enlightenment of the spirit. He also believes that through the engagement of Goshen Khan karate and understanding its values and history, students effectively protect themselves, improve their lives, and contribute to the betterment of their homes, community, and societies. He's an author of several books and an inspirational teacher for so many people. It's my great honor to be here talking with you today. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, very good, and thank you for inviting me. I feel great being here, and I hope I can share the stories that I have.
That's great. Again, I'm really excited that you're here. I'm really excited that you can share a lot of your stories about your personal life, your karate world, your spiritual life, and just plenty of stories that I know that you have that a lot of your people that you know, or you could call them fans, are wanting to hear and learn more about you. And I know that the people who have not heard about you yet are definitely in for some great stories. So I actually wanted to start by asking you about your childhood, your youth, and just how it was growing up.
So I was born in South Africa in 1949, 16th of January, and lived in South Africa for a number of years till the age of 29, then immigrated to Australia with my family. So I went to Japan in 1975, and I spent 1975, 1976 in Japan. Every 2 years, I would go to Japan to learn karate.
How did learning karate all begin with you?
Well, South Africa, being as violent as it is, forced us into situations where, you know, we had to protect ourselves. South Africa, being a very violent country, without a shadow of doubt, it is one of the most violent countries on this planet. I started as a kid. I started with wrestling, boxing, and then I got into karate. And we had to learn karate. You know, every corner there was a gang of some sort or the other. And being as violent as it was, I thought the best thing for me to do is to learn an Eastern martial arts where I can protect myself.
And you know many other martial arts as well, correct?
Yes, well, in Japan, I was very lucky in that I trained with Gogen Yamaguchi, the famous grandmaster. In 1975, I went to his college in Tokyo in a place called Nishiyogi Kobo, and I practiced the art there. But his dojo was very unique and very different to most places in Japan. His college was a karate college that had a number of systems and styles. So I was lucky. I was in the right place at the right time and learning all the different Japanese martial arts. Gogen Sensei, he comes from a lineage of samurai, which is the fighters, you know, of ancient Japan.
Was the training of these martial arts only a physical training, or did you learn mental or spiritual things as well?
To be honest with you, martial arts is not really a good word. It is more Budo. Budo, you know, martial arts and Budo is completely different. Budo cannot be translated into English. So the arts that I learned, the Buddha that I learned, reflected on the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And it was really down the line of what I really want to do. You know, it's about development of the mind, it's development of the spirit and the physical aspects. My teacher would say that to know the complete art, you know, the physical is very tiny, the mental is a bit harder, and the spiritual is the hardest. So, you know, everything seemed to have tied in at the right time, you know, having this great interest on spirituality and having this interest on the physical defense and, you know, finding the right teacher. That's, I think, the most important. I found the right teacher that understood or was moving in the direction of understanding the truth about Buddha.
One of the deeper masters of it.
Oh, yes. Gogen Yamaguchi Sensei was truly a master that was seeking the truth. He might have not had all the answers, but certainly made a great effort to discovering that truth. And, you know, Gogen Sensei was a keen follower of Sai Baba's teaching. He was also a keen follower of yoga and many of the spiritual teachers in India. So he connected with them. You connected with them, and I just found the right teacher.
Yeah, that's great that you found the right teacher that you were looking for all the aspects of karate, both spiritually and physically. You mentioned earlier about your international travel and training, so can you kind of share with us what that's like and where you go?
Yes, well, I got schools in a number of countries, and one such country here is in India, where I have teachers here. I have two teachers in particular, Shyan Bhaskar Giri and Shyan Gupta. Those are two brilliant teachers I have in India. They are establishing many schools in India, and they've invited me to come to India this time to have a seminar which ran for about 3 days. You know, I've written a number of books on my journey, and my latest book is written by a linguist in Botswana. He wrote my life story, and his name is Shyan Harbi Motalekosi. He wrote my story out of the goodness of his heart. He just completed my book, and it's being sold in India and the rest of the world.
Oh, so he created a biography for you,
of
you.
That's right, he did. And I actually enjoyed reading my own book, you know.
So did you know him before?
Yes, I actually ran a seminar in Botswana about 2 years ago, and he was one of the students that was at the seminar. And he heard some of my stories and loved it and said, wow, I'm going to write this book. So he decided to write my biography.
That's great that you inspired someone so much that they would write a biography about you. And that actually has to do a lot with my next question, which is about your other books. So let's start with the first book. Could you tell me a little bit about how you began to write it and what inspired you?
Well, you know, I was a high school dropout. I had no interest in education. You know, I was busy chasing women, I think. My interest was, you know, martial arts and fighting and everything else. I had no interest in education as such, you know. But when I came to India in the 80s, early 80s, I was sitting on a mound looking down at the ashram at Puttaparthi. And a voice entered my mind and said, get out your pad and pen. And I had a bag, an Indian bag on my left-hand side that had a pad and a pen. So I got out the pad and pen, and it said, write the word goodness. Yeah, I found it strange that I'm hearing a voice inside me. I was wondering, where was this voice coming from? You know, at first I looked around, there's nobody around, just myself, and I thought, gee, I think it's coming from the inside of myself. So I wrote the word goodness, and then the word started flowing out, and as it flowed, I wrote this beautiful stanza on goodness. And when it was over, I looked at it and I said, wow, did I write that? Then I realized it was not me, the I, the physical I, the ego, but it was the I inside. It was the divine in me that was actually speaking. So when I had written it, I showed it to a Canadian teacher who was at the ashram. And he read it and he says, when did Swami write this? And I said, it wasn't Swami, it was me. I wrote it on the mount. And he said, wow. I said, look, I heard this voice inside me and this is what happened. He says, fantastic. So early the next day, I said, let me go up to the mound again and try this trick for the second time. As you know, it's not a trick. You know, when the divine talks, it's not a trick, it's real. And so I went up on the mound and the word peacefulness came in. And I wrote this and I said, again, a big wow. And I said, wow, this is good stuff. And then the third day, it was truth. And it went on day after day after day. I started writing. And then I said, what am I going to do with all this information? And it was very clear. It came to me, write a book called Discovering Martial Arts, The Empty Hand Way. So I wrote this book. Of course, you know, it took 12 months for me to put it down, got it published. And almost every copy was sold. I only got about half a dozen copies. Then it was reproduced in India by Sai Towers, and they compiled it and they made copies, and which is available for anybody that wants to buy these books. So that was my first experience. But the miracle behind this book was just amazing. I got Christine, a friend of mine, to draw the cover of the book. And I normally sit in my classes with my left hand clenched and right hand open. And Christine has never seen me sit down in a Japanese position. She knows that I do karate, but she's never seen me sit down in this Japanese sitting position called seiza. So in the book itself, when she drew the cover, she drew this karate man in a nice natural surroundings, sitting with his left hand clenched and right hand open. And I said, wow. That's how I sit. So that has been the position I've taken with all my students. We always sit with left hand clenched, right hand open. Left hand represents the values of truth, love, peace, right conduct, and nonviolence, symbolizing goodness. The right hand is open, which symbolizes watch, W-A-T-C-H, which is watch your words, your actions, your thoughts, character, and heart. So we embrace goodness by the fist. We have an open hand, which means open yourself to observing your words, your actions, your thoughts, your character, and your heart. So that's how we sit. Now, when I produced this book, I got a call from a guy who said, you've written a book called Discovering Martial Arts. And the amazing part is I've never distributed the book. The books were just sitting in my store at that time. And he called me about this book, and I said, yes. And he said, could you send me a copy? I said, absolutely, no problem. And I said, look, this is the cost, and I'll send it to you. I said, by the way, can you tell me how did you know about this book? Because it's just produced. He said, well, I was at Manly Library, which is a suburb of Sydney, and he was looking for a martial arts book that relates to the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And he had searched through the week and he couldn't find anything. On the Friday, he said, oh, there's no such book. And as he was about to get up, a book fell from the top shelf, hit him on his head, and fell on his hands. And it was my book called Discovering Martial Arts. So he got my details from the book, phoned me the next day, and I sent him the book. That's how amazing the divine works.
And the book was never distributed yet.
Not yet. It wasn't distributed yet. For some reason or other, a copy had been sent to the library. That's how he received the book.
And conveniently hit him on the head, fell into his hands, exactly what he was looking for spiritual and physical and mental training.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's amazing. But, you know, that's just one story, just one story. And when I produced my second book called Buddhaka, the same thing happened to another gentleman that was in a martial arts shop looking for the book on truth and love. And he just put his hands out and he speaks to the divine and he says, where can I find a book on spirituality? And a book falls from a top shelf, hits him on the head, falls in his hands, and it's my book called Buddhaka. The beauty is, it is the kind of language that he wanted to learn about. Marshall McAdam is his name. He carries this book like his Bible, And if he needs an answer for the day, he opens the book at any page, and the answer is there for him.
And when you authored that second book, you did it in the same fashion where you weren't intending on writing a book or necessarily planning on doing that, but you were guided to write.
I tell you how it works. I never plan on anything. It just happens. Like this afternoon, you know, we were talking, Spencer and I were talking this afternoon, and we were talking about, he said, can you write a poem now? So I took it the other way. I wrote a poem on now, and it took me less than a minute to write this poem on now.
Let's take a listen to that poem that Haunchy Dina Naidu wrote, titled Now.
Now. Now so much described as the presence, favored to be our essence. Nevertheless, it is the gift of never focusing on anything but lift. When the end comes or the beginning starts, it is the now. Years, months, days, or minutes after, it will be that which will alter. The presence now or the future later. Be assured, if you focus on good now, it will be the divine guiding you in the now, forever and never later.
Yeah. So this is how it works. I don't even think of anything. It just comes. I write a poem. I write a story. I write a book. I wrote the book called We Are God. It took me 21 days to write this book. 21 days. You know, I was running a building construction company. I was running a martial arts store. I ran my karate. I was having 4 hours of sleep. A thought appeared in my mind, write a book called We Are God. I wrote this book, this entire book, in 21 days. Also available, you can get it. And it talks about why we are God. Now, I could never imagine in my entire life that I could write something in 21 days, 108 pages. I then said, wow, that's amazing. Of course, the divine is amazing. And then I decided to write another one called We Are the Power of God. So that's how I write my books.
So your life is guided by in the moment, by pretty much you could say what a lot of people always say is going with the flow.
I think I do a lot of tuning in, because I've come to realize that we're not really the doers of anything. You know, we're the doers of the physical things that we do, the normal day-to-day things. But really, I think the deeper side and the special things that we do in our life is really the divine working in us. You know, my leg was swollen overnight. You know, my left leg kicked a lot of people in the head. It's been a very naughty leg. And overnight, it swelled up like a football. So I said to Swami, you know, look at me. I've helped so many people heal. I can't heal myself. And that night, I had a dream. The Swami came into my dream. And he put his hand around me and he says, you know, I love the kind of work that you do. You're doing so much of good. He says, I love the way you teach the children and your students, you know, and you're talking about human values. And I was so moved and touched by this. And the next thing, I see a bus of Japanese tourists, and they saw me and they started screaming for joy, you know. So there was this connection between what I'm doing and the Japanese. And then the environment changed. It's like going into another dimension. And I found myself sitting on a chair. And next to me was Swami in his orange robe. And in this room itself, there were a number of deities, Lakshmi and Saraswati, in this room. And I quickly thought about when Moses was on the mount and God spoke to him and God said, you know, remove your shoes, you're on holy ground. And I looked at my feet, I had shoes on my feet. So I took the shoes and I left it outside the room and I came back and I sat on the chair. And when I did, Swami got up and he was on my left side. He got up and came to the front of me and then held my leg just below my knee and he rubbed it down towards my ankle. And as he rubbed it in a very gentle rub, the bliss that went through me into every cell in my body was just extraordinary. It was so blissful. It was like every cell in my body screaming hallelujah with joy. I was just completely captured by this. And then he did it for the second time, and the intensity was 10 times stronger. Now imagine how I felt as he was rubbing my leg. It was so intense. And then the third time. And the third time, I couldn't help myself. It was far greater than any of the others. And I just threw my hands up in the air and I said, wow. And I woke up, my wife was sleeping next to me. And she said, what's going on? And I said, well, you know, this strange thing happened. Swami just, you know, rubbed my leg, my injured leg. And she said, look at it. So with my right leg, I kicked out the blanket. And I looked at my leg, it's completely healed. In an instant, it was gone.
Wow. That's like a direct example of the divine working immediately through you, through a dream and an experience in such a fast manner.
I think, just to add to this, you know, as I said earlier, that this leg of mine, the left leg, was a very naughty leg. It kicked a lot of people in the head. It did a lot of naughty things. And so it swelled up for a reason. It swelled up because I had to carry some karmic action.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Swami came to remove that because he saw the kind of work that I was doing and he was very happy with what I was doing. And then he said, it's time to cure this man. And he rubbed my leg and cured it. So, right. You know, the divine is just extraordinary.
Wow.
And I've surrendered completely to Swami. And I said, you know, my life is his message. And that's how I live.
In the dream, Swami said he was very pleased by what you're doing with the kids and how you're teaching them. So what is that like? What do you think is the difference of how you're teaching the kids well?
Well, I in my karate school, I've got education human values, and I call it karate care. Karate care. It's about caring for the karate community. And my aim and objective is to spread the teachings of Swami, spread the teachings, the good teachings, the powerful teachings that changes people's lives. You know, I daily, when I run my classes, I'm talking to my students about values without really mentioning Swami, because I don't do that openly because of a number of reasons. I have Muslims, I have Christians, I have people of other faiths. But I will talk about his teachings because his teachings is incredible.
The philosophical teachings.
The philosophical teachings, the truth about life. And I bring it out and I talk about things. And of course, there's a lot of things that Swami has put into my mind that I also talk about. So I don't read any books. I don't read. Whatever lesson Swami wants to give me, he places in me and I get those lessons, you know. So I know that many, many hundreds, if not thousands of lives have been changed by the teachings that I do in karate. And it has helped so many, so many people that I feel I'm doing something. I'm making change. I'm making difference. You know, I came to India this time. I invited by Shyam Giri and Shyam Gupta. We invited me to come here, and I brought seven of my Australian students along, and we taught them karate. Karate like they've never seen before, because the level of karate with this group has been lifted. I brought in the values, and I spoke about values, and I spoke to them the importance of having good character. So I have that philosophy, character before karate, character during karate, and character after karate.
I bet the kids enjoy having fun, learning the wisdom that you transfer to them.
Well, I don't want to claim the wisdom. You know, as I said earlier in the piece, you know, I'm a high school dropout with not much education. It all comes from Swami, so full credit to him.
Why do you think karate is good for us and other Budos?
Well, as long as there is, I think, the spiritual aspects and the mental knowledge, I think it'll be good. If it's just the physical, I think it's just exercising. You know, we need to not only exercise the physical body, but we need to exercise the mind as well as the spirit. So Everything needs exercising. The Japanese traditional way of Budo Karate is the best. It's not the tournaments, it's not the competition, it's not the ego things that is being done, but the true aspects where human life can be lifted.
How is training internationally when you train people for karate? You said that you not only do large seminars and personal trainings with smaller groups, but you also do trainings with actors and filmmakers.
Yes. Well, I gave a talk in New York. And so I started talking about my life and some of the miraculous things that have happened. And people were very impressed. And there was a young man in the audience, quite tall, African-American guy. And he put his hand up and he asked me, he said, "Mr. Naidoo, can you tell us some of your stories where you use karate to protect yourself?" And I said, "Yep. When I was in primary school, I was attacked by a boy called Sabu. And I was 10 years old and Sabu was about 17 years old. And he beat me. He beat me to a pulp and I lay on the ground, you know, very emotional. A teacher comes along, a female teacher comes along, and she says, 'What's the matter?' And said, 'I just got beaten up by Sabu.' She said, 'Oh.' So she takes me to the bathroom, you know, gets me all cleaned up and so on. And off I went. So I then started to do my martial arts from the age of 11 and qualified. And I was 18 years old when I was walking on the road from a party, heading back home with a friend, Roland. And this is the story that I was relating to the audience. And so to continue with the story, what happened was Sabu turned out to be a gangster. And he was a really mean guy, and he recognized me at a distance in this late part of the morning, or early part of the morning, or late at night. And I immediately felt that Sabu was going to do this again. So I was well-trained by then, well-trained and much more stronger. And Sabu came along, and then, you know, after a few words, exchanges, and he thought he can throw the first punch. And I hit him before he could even, as he swung his hand, I hit him. I knocked him out cold. And so did we do with the other two guys that were there. So my karate worked for me. I was able to use it in that split second without any hesitation. So I related the story to the group. And Jan that asked me the question was so impressed. And then he said, "Tell us another one." And I told the audience a second story, and he says, "Another one." And after the third one, I said, "You know, enough of my violent actions. You know, I think probably another time I would talk about it." So as I was leaving at the end of the function, Jan handed me his card and says, "Call me." And I looked at the card, and Jan is a director of movies, and he's a huge comic maker in the United States. So when Jan did his movie Justice for Hire, he asked me to train the actors and be part of this movie in LA.
So you trained actors and you trained in seminars, and then you were telling me that you also trained part of the Australian Armed Forces. How was that experience?
Well, I was invited to train the Armed Forces, the heavy gunners, the 110 Battalion. Now, these are quite big soldiers. You know, these guys, most of them are well over 6 foot, you know, 6 foot seven, going higher and higher. And I'm only an average guy, 5 foot nine. And I was asked to train these soldiers, and I taught them unarmed combat for 2 years. I was training them that when your hands are tied, use your legs. When your legs are tied, use your hands. When your hands and your legs are tied, use your head. You know, that's the rule of self-defense. So with the army itself, I taught them meditation. Really, I taught them how to meditate. I taught them silent sitting, meditation. I taught them weapons, how to use weapons, you know, things like sticks and unarmed combat where people grab, hold, choke. You know, the daily kind of things that will happen. Or in the field of combat, if they lose their guns or... And you have an opponent attacking with a knife, how to react, what to do. And I always told the soldiers that your mind has to be clear. You know, as we learned that, you know, you have seven levels of the mind, right? So when somebody attacks you, and if your mind is like a jammed highway, you're not thinking clearly. You can't think of escapes. So your mind has to be free, like a free highway with no cars, you know, so you're free. It's free to travel. So when you think like that without fear, then your mind works well and you're able to use your defense accordingly.
That's what you were teaching earlier. We did a 15-minute little training when we met. You taught me how to break out of holds. If someone grabs your arm, if someone grabs your throat, use your energy and your motion of your body to break free of their grasp.
I think it's ideal and it's essential for every human being to learn how to protect themselves. You know, simple things like grabs and holds and chokes and so on. You know, in the world, as Swami says, most people are good. It's only a tiny few that's not so good. So in times you may be confronted with situations such as this, where people grab you or choke you or hold you, one should know. I mean, the ideal scenario here is for me to be able to help students, even at Swami's ashram. If I could teach the students these simple, basic, elementary defense, it would be very helpful. You know, I'm happy to travel to any part of the world, teaching anybody with no hesitation. I have absolutely no hesitation in guiding people to learn self-defense.
When you're training, how do you warn your trainees?
Sometimes, you know, you get funny people. You know, when you're doing the course of the training, you're teaching them how to break against holds and grips and so on. And I always say to people, you know, sometimes you get funny people. They come around and when they try you, they want to see what you can do. And you always have that. You know, egos is such a bad thing. So anyway, I say to them, I said, don't just grab me. Tell me what you're going to do, and then we'll work through it. So I was teaching high school kids, and one of the kids just grabbed me from behind. And my body just reacted. And I knocked him down, and I think I hit him a little bit too hard. Of course, everybody laughed at that time, but I wasn't laughing. I said, look, I told you, never just grab me because my body reacts. And that's how it is. Your body just reacts if you're a trained person.
And you even tell that to the older, the adults that want to test you.
Absolutely. Just, you know, I'm scared of myself, really, what I'm going to do. My wife tells me, you know, just be careful. You don't know your power.
So in your journey of life, you've experienced many things, and you've also experienced some miracles. Can you share some of those?
Absolutely. Happy to share. I was in my business one day and I was speaking to a lady called Joan Moyland, a very good friend of mine. And I said, you know, I've witnessed so many miracles of people, other people having miracles, but nothing happened to me personally. So Joan said to me, she said, look, you know, when it is willed by Swami, these things will happen. And that was on the 26th of July. So that afternoon, I got home and I entered the back entrance of our home and I sat in the lounge and my whole family was around. And I said to my son, my son, whose name is Meshin, he now lives in Sweden. So I said to him, I said, Mesh, can you go into my bedroom, please, and get my adapter for me? He said, where is it? I said, it's in the cupboard. So he said, okay, Dad. Happy to do that. So off he went. And as he was going along, he says, who has been spraying this vibhuti on the floor? And my wife and I looked at each other and I said, did you spill any vibhuti on the floor? She said, no. He says, it's in your cupboard. And in a very loud voice. And I said, what? He says, it's in your cupboard. It's on your clothes. I said. And then he screams out. He says, it's on the wall. And my wife and I ran into the room and there was this vibhuti, trail of vibhuti, from where we were leading up to my bedroom into my personal closet. Remember, I wanted a personal experience, personal closet. And then I'm looking at it. It's on my clothing. We move the clothing and there the vibhuti is on the wall past the clothing, right? And a big 26 written on the wall with Vibhuti and a number of dots there, like the universe, all on the wall, stuck to the wall. And I said, wow, that was the date, 26th of July. And there is the Vibhuti in a big 26, showing me that Swami listens to everything we say. Wow.
What a blessing. How did you come to first know Sai Baba?
Oh, well, you know, people were coming from India and they were talking about this amazing teacher in India. And a police officer, a colleague of my dad, said to him, there's this amazing man, spiritual teacher in India. His name is Sai Baba. There's a book downstairs written by Howard Moffat, who had become a good friend of mine, actually, family friend. He passed now. Howard has died. But anyway, Howard had written this book called Man of Miracles. So this police officer said to my dad, get a copy of that book. So Dad went downstairs, had a look at the cover, came back upstairs, and he told his colleague, what, you want me to read about a hippie? And the police officer there, his colleague said, no, he's not a hippie. He's a spiritual leader. Get the book. So anyway, Dad got the book. And he read through the book. He couldn't put it down. He read this entire book and he says, I'm going. And we said, where are you going? He says, I'm going to India to see Sai Baba. So those early years, we're talking about 68 or 69, thereabout. Anyway, he decided to come to India. And it was, I think, Whitefield. And he sat at the tree and he saw Swami at a distance. And Swami was heading in his direction. He says, oh, I hope he's not coming towards me. And then he said, I'm going to shut my eyes. So he shut his eyes, and then Swami, each time he opened, Swami was closer. And then eventually he said, I'm going to shut my eye and never to open it. And anyway, he felt a tap on the shoulder, and when he opened his eyes, Swami was there. And Swami says, come in for an interview. And he gave him an interview, and he told him the story of his life. I tell you what, when Dad came back, he was changed. He wasn't the man that had gone to India. He was a different man. So that's how we began following Swami.
What do you think he was trying to do when he was having his eyes closed?
Well, he didn't want to attract attention. You know, if he contacted Swami with his eyes, he thought then maybe Swami will come towards him. He didn't want him to come towards him. He said, you know, I think Dad did a lot of naughty things in his life, and he was kind of guilty about it. Yeah, so he didn't want Swami to come and reveal everything. But Swami tapped him on the shoulder and then revealed everything to him. So a friend of mine, you know, in the early days, I would talk to everybody about Swami, you know. Anybody walking past my shop, I would call them in and talk about Swami. I would tell everybody. I was kind of mesmerized by the things he does and the way he does it, his teachings. It just blew my mind that I've met such an incredible teacher in my lifetime. Anyway, a friend of mine who was a karate teacher, he came in and I told him about Swami. And I said, look, I got a little gift for you. And he said, what is it? I said, there's the pendant of Sai Baba. Whenever you need anything, just ask him and he will help you. He says, really? I said, yeah. So I told him a couple of stories. He says, okay, I'll take it. He says, can I have two, one for my wife and one for myself? I said, yeah. And so I gave him two. And off he went, and he came back early the next day and he says, could I have another seven? I said, seven? He says, yeah, I want to give it to every member of my family. And I said, okay. So I gave him another seven and off he went. And so we've been meeting from time to time. And then one day he came to my shop and he says, guess what happened? I said, tell me. He says, well, my kids were playing on our farm. And my daughter has a pendant of Swami around her neck. And there was a clap of thunder and lightning. And the lightning struck my daughter on her chest. And it hit the pendant. And when it hit the pendant, it split into two directions and not a single mark on the body. Wow. So she got saved.
So the pendant absorbed all of the lightning strike. Did she experience any pain?
No pain. Just boom, boom. It just hit the pendant and split in two directions. And I said, wow, what an incredible story.
If you have Swami around you, he's always protecting you.
Absolutely. I think it's the surrender part. You know, you surrender and you trust and everything works. And I think here's a family that trusted me and trusted what I said and, you know, appreciated it and put that pendant around their body with love. And Swami protected that family.
Yeah. Whatever you do with love, you receive with love. You know, whatever you do with hate, you receive with hate. That's like the law of karma, you know, in the natural state of the universe. So that's a perfect example, kind of what you're explaining. Just if you do it with love, you're protected with love.
You know, I talk to my students about love. And, you know, love is L-O-V-E, right? So L stands for living with respect. If you live with respect, this is the beginning of love. O is obeying the rules. If you obey the rules that you live in or work in or whatever environment you're placed in, like I do it with karate, if you obey the rules, this is love. And V stands for valuing others. If you value others, everybody around you, this is real love. And E is everything we do. This is real love. You know, living with respect, obeying the rules, valuing others and everything we do. If we do it with this intensity called love, nothing bad would happen to you. So you'd like to hear one more story of a miracle. I can tell you one. My father passed, my father had a heart attack and the ambulance had picked him up and I was sitting in the back of the pennant and back of the ambulance. And the paramedics had told me he's gone. So I had a pendant of Swami. And I took this pendant and I put it in his hand and I just grabbed it and made it into a fist and I just, you know, got him to hold it and he came back to life. Much to the surprise of the paramedics, and they can't believe that he actually came back to life. So, you know, my father had passed many times. Now he's gone. Now he's permanently deceased. But during the course of his final years on the planet, he had passed many times. And one of the times that he passed, he told us of the experience where he left his body and an angel and a being was with him. So he's not quite sure who the being was. And he was traveling out into the universe. And the angel said, look up. And when he looked up, he could see the heavens. And he said, wow, it looks so beautiful. And then the angel said, look down. And when he looked down, he could see the earth and he could see the suffering of people. Then he said to the angel, but they need me. I need to be there with them to help them. And he was back in his body alive.
So can you tell me about the history of karate and any of the original teachings and how far back it goes?
Well, my teacher Gogen Sensei told me that karate started in India. So I did a bit of research and investigation and I found it to be true that karate did start in India. That India is the mother of karate. And karate traveled from India to China, taken there by Bodhidharma Daishi about 1,500 years ago, and he taught the monks. And from there, it went to an island called Okinawa. And from Okinawa, it went to Japan. But as it went along from one country to the other, the spirituality that was originally taught had gone. The mental training had slowly disappeared, and eventually when it got to Japan, very little spirituality was taught. I would say about 10%, and most of 90% was physical, very little meditation. So, but Gogen Sensei wanted to bring it all back in his system, so I took it onto myself that I will bring it all back and actually take it to India one day, which I now did. This is my very first trip to India in terms of teaching karate. So I took it back to the mother. I took it back to the mother in a more refined form, in a better form, using the Japanese science behind the movements, using the Okinawan science and also their very deep spiritual understanding, the Chinese understanding, the deep Chinese understanding, and of course the Indian understanding. So I gathered all this kind of information over many, many years. I've been training for over 50 years now. all these many years of training, that I gathered all this information, and I said, India being the mother of karate, I got to bring it back to this land where it all began. And this is what I did. And in the seminar, in my first seminar here in India, I had hundreds of students participating in this seminar, which is the world's first. And next year, I'll be coming back with over 10,000 students learning karate and martial arts from me.
How did you learn as much as you know about the history of karate? I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot throughout the 50 years, but how are you continuously still learning and evolving the spiritual, mental, and physical training of karate?
The bottom line, the middle line, and the top line, I do nothing. It's all given to me. I don't read any books. I don't do any research. I just let it happen. So I wrote a story that is available in audio. It's called Goshin, The Art That Never Died. This entire story was given to me about the journey of karate. So, of course, I created fictitious names and so on. But the journey itself, the story, the underlying story in this is all true. So I have created the story that is available on YouTube, or people can get this from me. But the main thing that I was trying to do is to make people understand that karate had started in India. This is the mother of karate. As India is the mother of yoga, it is also the mother of karate.
Do you see a promising future for karate, or a new direction of karate? Especially now you're trying to bring it back to India. So do you see the future of it changing and evolving here in India?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we hear stories that India, the young ladies in India, molested and raped, and bad things happen to them. I think it's very essential for the ladies in India to learn karate, especially the kind of karate that I teach. I would say more especially because I don't teach fancy karate. I teach karate that works, how to protect themselves. I don't like acting karate. I like it to be real. I like it to be working. And this is the way it is. And I also, together with the physical aspects, I also teach about the mind, how to control situations. When you have an aggressor, how to subdue the aggressor by just relaxing, by just thinking correctly and clearly, and never be aggressive. Don't have fear. I always teach my students, never have fear for anyone. Have no fear. And knowing how to apply these techniques, as I told you earlier on today, and I shared with you earlier on today, that it's very simple. It's magical how it works. You just have to know the techniques behind it.
So you were talking about the aspects of training in karate, and some of them were having no fear is essential in anything in life. When you have fear, you tense up and your mind begins to become clogged and you can't think as sharply. And also, when you're with an opponent, you say one of the most effective things is controlling the situation. And that could be with your body gestures or with your words or with your mind. How do those come into play into daily life and into karate?
Well, I think everybody has an element of fear. You know, the toughest man on the planet has an element of fear. Everybody has an element of fear. All we have to do is to tap into their fears. You tap into their fears and they will back off. When you show that you're not afraid, you will externalize it when you're not afraid. When you are afraid, it will show on you that you're afraid. So I say to people on the first level, don't be afraid of another being. When you're not afraid of another being, your mind is like a freeway that's empty. When you are afraid, your mind is like a jam-packed freeway and you can't think clearly. So if you eliminate fear, if you remove this fear from your mind and never be afraid of your aggressor and be calm in that situation, the divine will work through you and protect you, right? So By learning martial arts, I just want to explain this part. We have 7 levels of the mind, right? So we have the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and the higher mind. Those 3 levels work like this. When you consciously learn something and repeatedly, and you repeat the learning over and over, it then goes into the subconscious mind, right? Which is the warehouse mind. And when you need it in times of need, the stormen takes it out, which is the higher mind consciousness, and uses it immediately. So that's how the mind works. So if you're not afraid, then the mind is free to grab the information and react. But when, like the situation with Sabu, when I was confronted with Sabu and I knew he was going to attack me, I was very confident. I was very strong. I was powerful. I wasn't afraid. If I had fear, I would probably be killed. But I had no fear. I had absolutely no fear. And when he threw his attack, the divine worked through me, and I hit him. As a matter of fact, that was funny. When I hit him that hard, he flew. And I saw this guy flying in the air. I thought that was Superman. He flew and fell on his back. So that's how powerful the strike was. Now, I never thought about it. I never thought, here comes an attack, let me attack this guy. I didn't even think about anything. The divine just worked. But I had to help the divine in a particular way. I had to practice my skills, store it in a subconscious mind, and the divine used it. So that's how it works. So never be afraid of anybody.
And you can apply that probably to any situation. When you're faced with a task, instead of turning inward and cowering to a task or a situation, approach it with fearlessness.
Never give up, never give in, and do things immediately. I believe in those 3 things. I never give in to a bad person. I never give in. I stand my ground. I never give up to say that I'm afraid of this guy. And I act immediately to do something about it.
That's one of the teachings that Sai Baba teaches. He says, when you have a pure or selfless thought, a thought of goodness, act on it immediately and not wait to do something good for someone.
I was born in South Africa in 1949, and I was 4 months premature, even more than 4 months, I'm not quite sure. And there was a riot in South Africa where there was a riot between the Africans and the Indians, and the Indians were being killed and slaughtered in the hundreds. And Mum was pregnant to me at that time, and I just came out 4 months or 5 months premature and very tiny, the size of the palm of my hand, and I just fell out. And they had a shoebox as my bed with cotton wool as a blanket, and they fed me with a dispenser. Now, there was a reason I was born. And anyway, in this really trying situation and circumstances, I lived. And one day, Mum was carrying me, and I slipped out of her hands and fell to the ground. And so I survived. So there must be a reason why I'm alive today. And my entire journey, you know, entire journey has been a journey of violence. But the divine has educated me, has put me in that situation so I can learn self-defense, that I can live through real situations where people are attacking. And I had to fight something like 30 people at some stages, you know, where I had to defend. And every time it worked, you know, I had people attacking me with 2 knives at a time. You know, I was able to protect myself with ease, without any fear, not being afraid, and it just worked.
That's amazing. It's like a real-world example of what you'd see in the movies, you know, when this actor is acting to be someone who's being attacked by 5 guys or defending themselves or defending someone else. You are a real-world example of someone who has to experience the evil of violence and transcend it. And you dive into violence, but you use it only for goodness.
I had a situation where I was in a function place, and a friend called me and he said, "Oh, my nephew's getting beaten up. Can you please help?" So, you know, when you do karate, everybody wants help. You become everybody's policeman. So anyway, I ran out with this guy and I said, I saw two guys on the floor, one guy on the top beating the other guy up. And there was about 30 people around these guys. And I said, which one's your nephew? He says, the one at the bottom that's getting beaten up. So I said, I'll fix it up. And I said, look, just watch your back because they will, these guys will probably stab you. So have your back towards the car and just watch what I do. So I walked up there and I grabbed the guy on the top. My first hand went to his collar. I grabbed his collar. The other hand went to his groin and I squeezed his groin and he lifted. He was in pain and I lifted and chucked him. And now as I chucked him, a guy on my left-hand side lunged at me with a knife. You know what? I wasn't even looking in his direction and I kicked him. It just worked. Like, it's like Swami taking my leg and kicking this guy automatically, and he flew. And I remember the part in the movie Moses where the ocean separated. You know, when I walked forward, the 30 guys just separated. Everyone seemed to be afraid to come anywhere near me. So it's amazing how the divine works. It's amazing, you know. I think when Krishna told Arjuna to take your arrow and just fight and kill the evil, that's what Swami does. I mean, I have the art in me, and when there's a need, it just works automatically. So, you know, I would suggest to everybody, be on the side of the divine always, you know, and the divine will protect you.
And be there fearlessly. Absolutely. Another example of going into a situation without fear and coming out victorious.
Yes.
Teaching evil a lesson.
I still can't believe that you're almost 70.
Yeah. I'm almost 70. On the 16th of January, I'll be 70 years old. When I came to India and I did training with the guys, I said to all the students, a few hundred of them, I said, we're going to do 300 sit-ups and I'm doing it with you. And I did 300 sit-ups. They thought I was joking. I said, no, we're going to do 300 sit-ups. So we did 300 sit-ups. And I was going to continue to 350, but I found these guys were giving up after 250. And it was getting less and less. And I said, okay, I'll stop at 300.
They can't even keep up. They couldn't keep up with the old guy. Nearly 70 years old. I've been talking with Hanshi Dina Naidu from South Africa, master of karate. Thank you for coming on the show. It was a pleasure talking to you, pleasure learning the stories. Thanks for sharing everything.
Thank you, Sairam.
If you enjoyed this interview and you're a student of karate, a teacher of karate, or anyone that's simply interested in learning more about Hanshi Dina Naidu, you can find him on Facebook and his website, GoshinKanInternational.com. That's GoshinKanInternational.com. Also, watch out for his brand new podcast that he's coming out with called Discovering Kyatsu with Hanshi Dina Naidu. Thank you for listening.